Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Hello, my name is Scarlett Lewis. I'm the founder of the Jesse Lewis Choose Love movement. Welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Scarlett, I am so thrilled to have you here today on our podcast. And for anyone who doesn't know, Scarlett is the mother of Jesse Lewis, who was killed in his first grade classroom during the tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary School. That was 7 years ago, one of the worst mass school shootings. 20 children plus another 6 educators. Scarlett, can you tell us, I know that for a couple of days after this horrific event, you went home because you needed to get something for Jesse. And what did you find?
Yeah, so I went home to my little farmhouse where I raised my 2 boys as a single mom, thinking I could never go back there again. But I did because I wanted actually to get his clothes for the funeral, and I wanted to be the one that dressed him. And I found on my way out a message that he had written on our kitchen chalkboard shortly before he died. 3 words: nurturing, healing, love. And they were phonetically spelled because he was a 6-year-old boy in first grade and just learning how to write. But I knew instantly that if the perpetrator had been able to give and receive nurturing, healing love, the tragedy would never have happened. I knew that I would be spreading that message for the rest of my life. I knew that that's what we needed in our schools, in our homes, in our communities, that that was the way that we were going to be able to not only survive, but thrive. And that's literally what I've been doing every single day, all day long, from that day.
When you found that message and you realized that what you were going to do, what you needed to do, and what Jesse left that message for, you founded the Jesse Lewis Choose Love Foundation. And one of the things you did was you consulted a Western Connecticut State professor, Christopher Cook. He was the director of the Center for Compassion, Creativity, and Innovation. What made you go to the professor, and what were you looking for?
I reached out to Dr. Cook because I knew what Jesse's message meant to me personally, and I knew that it was giving me a mission, but I wondered if there was anything else that I was maybe missing or not seeing, or if there was another translation of it. And so I met with Dr. Cook, and he did some research on those 3 words and found that they are in the definition of compassion across all cultures, which was really amazing. And so together we broke down the meaning of each of the words and found that it comprised a powerful and profound formula for choosing love in any situation, circumstance, or interaction. So in other words, when you use this formula that is derived directly from Jesse's message of nurturing, healing, love, you can thoughtfully respond with choosing love, by choosing love in any situation or circumstance, or even interaction. So when you do that, obviously, kindness, caring, concern, compassion, we can't always choose what happens to us in life. We know that. I would never have chosen what happened with my son, but we can always choose how we thoughtfully respond. And that's actually when we take our personal power back. And when we thoughtfully respond with love, we are making the world a better place. The other option is reacting with anger, hatred, or revenge, especially prolonged anger. And when we do that, we're giving our personal power away. And literally, that's the definition of becoming a victim. And that does not feel good. And I know in my own personal journey, I actually remember the exact moment when I was still at my mom's house and I was looking out into her backyard at the bird feeder. I was watching all these cardinals eating bird seed. And of course, Jesse and my mom, that was their connection. They both loved birds. And I thought to myself, I am not going to be another victim of Adam Lanza's. I know that I could let this take me down, and I'm not gonna let that happen. I'm going to choose life. I'm gonna choose to live, and I'm going to model this for my surviving son, and we're gonna have fun. We're gonna have a life. We're gonna continue. And I didn't know what that looked like or how I would do it, but it was definitely a conscious decision that I made.
Well, you just mentioned the word fun, and I understand that Jesse didn't just leave a message on your kitchen chalkboard, but he also left his brother, JT, who was 12 or 13 at the time, a message.
JT was 12 years old in seventh grade, and the day that we came home to the house, and remember that was a few days later, JT went into his room and found a little note that had been folded up and left on his desk. And when he unfolded it, he found that it said, "Have a lot of fun." And I remember him walking in and showing me that little note. And I was just awestruck by it because that was so profound. And it actually happens to be, now that I have done research on both of these messages, really also one of the most important things that we do on a daily basis. There's so much research behind the importance of fun and play with brain development, with the way that we lead our lives, with what we can be and do. And it's just so vitally important. So now I end my talks a lot of time with the two most important things that we do on a daily basis, whether we realize it or not. It's choosing love as the foundation of every choice that we make, because we're either choosing from love or fear, and the outcomes look vastly different, and having a lot of fun, because as we know, the pain and suffering that everyone feels. I mean, as humanity, we're all connected by the want and need to love and be loved. That is the great equalizer. We're all human beings. We're all the exact same in that. When I talk to kids in a school, I say, "You're the exact same as your educator," because it doesn't matter any perceived difference. We're all the same in the want and need to love and be loved. We all feel pain. We all suffer to a certain degree. Yet we all want to be happy. And really, I feel like Jesse left us this formula that enables us to do that. And that's really what we need more of in this world.
In fact, in doing some research, you once, in one of the talks you were giving, you actually said that December 14th, or right around then, was actually the greatest day of compassion.
Yes, I did. I did. And I was on the receiving end of that compassion. Wow. It was absolutely incredible how the world mobilized to send us love, and how they responded with one another. It was like that tragedy ignited something in everyone. And it was different because I think the kids were so young, and it was so shocking. And everyone was able to empathize, I think, because of the age of the victims, and put themselves in our shoes and feel our pain. And because of that, the outpouring of love was something I'd never seen before in the history of, my life. And it was absolutely incredible to be on the receiving end. I will never forget that.
Well, I do remember all of the coverage and the outpouring from all over the world. And that kind of brings me to, one of the things that we've talked about is the fact that immediate responses to events. You know, it's unbelievable, and the compassion and the love is there. But as we get further and further and further away from that event happening, and time passes, it's less and less in the forefront of people's minds. And in the foundation that you have, and you call it a movement, not an organization. So this is something that brings on a daily basis the fact that everyone still needs that compassion and love, and that we shouldn't have to have such traumatic events take place for that to continue.
Yeah, I'd like to make an important distinction too. Right after the tragedy, what we saw was empathy. And empathy actually lights up the same receptors in our brain as physical pain. So people really did put themselves in our shoes. They felt our pain, and that was the outflowing of love that you saw. But because empathy is a painful process, there is something called empathy fatigue, empathy burnout, erroneously called sometimes compassion burnout, but it's really empathy burnout, because you can only feel someone else's pain for so long, and then you literally have to turn away. And so we did see that, and that's a big distinction that I'd like to make with compassion, because compassion, and this is how we teach it as well, we call it compassion in action. To really make that distinction, there is the identifying of the pain or the need, the empathetic component, but then there's also the action component, when you actively do something to help ease that pain. And science tells us that when we do that action component, and this is actually research, that all of, and I say the nurturing, healing love that we give out, we get back. So when we actually practice compassion and also are mindfully aware of the benefits, we're actually energizing ourselves. If we get stuck in empathy, there is the tendency to have to turn away. But it's that understanding that this action component actually, it not only helps other people, but it actually helps yourself. And it's an interesting lesson that I've learned personally through my work in the movement, the Choose Love movement, is that every day, all day long, I am doing for others, and at the same time, it's healing, and I'm doing for me. It's not why I do it, but it's a byproduct of that, and it's literally incredible. And I actually see that in my son as well. My son has a pretty amazing story, JT, where he had orphan genocide survivors reach out to him from Rwanda, and you know, kind of share their story. And he turned around after that and started an organization called Newtown Helps Rwanda. And he started raising money to help them go to university, to build self-sustaining fish ponds and poultry operations, and help severely traumatized kids here in the United States. And the amazing outcome of that was that he's healing himself through it. And by the way, he didn't go to doctors, he didn't go on medication. All he did was compassion in action. And it was so incredibly powerful. And it was, you know, of course, I'm always learning, and I'm learning from him, I'm learning from my experience, but this is a really big part of the Choose Love movement.
It certainly is. And I understand that when JT did his first raising of monies for one of the children, he came home and said he had raised enough money to put one of the young ladies through college.
He did. And he was able to have a Skype session with her and to tell her in person. And I'll never forget that day. Her name is Betty. And she literally just broke down and was unable to speak and literally kind of like collapsed. And JT looked at me and he said, "Is she okay?" And I said, "JT, you know, with some effort on your behalf, you completely changed the life and future of a young adult halfway around the world. Like, you did that. You know, it was amazing the power that one person had to impact another person, even on the other side of the world. And it was incredible that doing for her was doing for him and making the world a better place. It was just it was an incredible experience for all of us.
Well, you know, that's what people don't understand is you help one person, it's contagious.
It is. There is a ripple effect. There literally is a scientific ripple effect to it. It's pretty amazing.
Well, we talk about social and emotional learning, the 21st century life skills. I'd like to talk about some of the programs that you have in Choose Love Movement. One of the things we'll talk about is that they're free.
Yes.
They're absolutely free.
Yes. So going back to Dr. Cook, you know, when we were looking at these words and analyzing them, nurturing, healing, love, I said, Dr. Cook, I know that my mission in life is to get this into schools, but I'm not really sure what that looks like. And he said, well, I think it looks like social and emotional learning. I'd never heard of it before. Even, you know, as a mother, I'd never heard of it. And so I started doing research. Yeah, right. I and a lot of people's eyes glaze over when I say that, actually. But I started doing research, and I realized that teaching kids these essential life skills, such as, by the way, how to have healthy and meaningful relationships, how to manage their emotions, how to be resilient to the issues they face and even grow through them, how to make responsible decisions, just to name a few. Teaching kids these essential life skills actually addresses the cause. So in other words, reduces and prevents so much of the suffering that we see in schools that then translates out into society. And I'm not just talking about bullying and violence. I'm talking about what we're seeing now is escalating mental health issues, suicide, depression, substance abuse, incarceration. All of these things can be reduced and prevented by teaching these essential life skills. It was so incredible to me that I literally went into the curriculum director's office at Sandy Hook, and I said breathlessly, oh my gosh, have you heard of this thing called social and emotional learning? This was literally like 2 months after the tragedy, and she was like, of course. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, we spent so much money on this program that we didn't have enough money to train our teachers, so the program never got out of the box. And I say it that way because literally, I think that was branded on my brain. And I went to the drawing board and I thought, we have to develop more of a practice than a program, because we ask so much of our superhero teachers out there. What is a way that we can incorporate it so that they get benefit as well? And if they haven't learned this, because by the way, these skills and tools are not innate within us, we have to learn them. That means that if we didn't learn them in home and in school, we don't necessarily have them as an adult. And I use myself as an example. At 44 years old, when Jesse was murdered and I just heard about this, I didn't have these skills and tools. I've learned them as an adult, and it's made a huge impact in my life. And so I really went to the drawing board with a lot of educators and child psychologists, psychiatrists, early child development specialists, administrators, and we created a program that we believe transcends all of the impediments of getting this to children. And then I actually had to make it no cost, and I'm going to offer it at no cost for as long as I possibly can, because first of all, it was priced out of the market to be able to benefit my child. How can you price something out of the market that you know can transform and save lives? So we have programming that we call it Next Generation Social Emotional Learning Plus, because it's not just just social emotional intelligence. It's positive psychology, mindfulness, neuroscience, emotional intelligence, character education. It's a whole bunch of kind of really the best of the best put together into one program. And not just for kids. So we have it, it spans all of the grade levels. It's infant, toddler, pre-K through 12th grade. But we also have a program for homes, for parents and caregivers, because this is really important information that, by the way, I wish that I had had as a mother. I forgive myself. You can't give what you don't have. But I,
what you don't have and what you don't know.
That's right. But I realized how this really could have helped my parenting for sure. And then by popular demand, when I would be launching this in districts across the country and world, by the way, I would have never fail. If there was a celebration, I would have the president of the Chamber of Commerce. I would have the mayor, the chief of police, downtown business district association, business owners, all saying, well, how can we be part of this? We want these skills and tools. We want to be part of the solution. We want to choose love, bottom line. And so we made a program for communities. And by popular demand, we're soon to be having a program released for the workplace as well, because these skills and tools really can benefit everyone. And interestingly enough, we also have a hugely successful pilot program in the prison system, and it's going to be going system-wide in Connecticut shortly, because unfortunately, if you don't teach these skills and tools on the front end, sometimes if we're lucky enough, we get to teach them on the back end.
I want to talk about that in just a second, because again, I want to talk about your experience there going to one of the prisons. But while we're talking about this, and you talked about education worldwide, this program has reached 1,718,000, and that's just an estimate, students since 2016, more than 85 countries, all 50 states plus DC, and you're instrumental in changing legislation to incorporate SEL into the schools. And I believe in 2015, Congress in Connecticut approved Every Student Achieves Act to advance and support social and emotional learning.
Yeah, that is. There's been so much movement in the last 7 years. It's really been incredible. And I think our voice has been powerful in that movement. The other thing that I was able to do is really kind of change the dialogue around social emotional learning, which has been available for decades in schools with programming, but it's been looked at as kind of this nice to have, but not necessarily need to have.
It's usually not something that people know about.
I was surprised that a lot of people hadn't heard about it. 7 years later, it's now the buzzword, which makes me so happy. And we really added, I believe, to the movement of SEL in that, you know, we linked it with school safety. And so now social emotional learning is in the final report of the Federal Safe School Commission. When it's necessary to keep our children safe, all the external safety measures in the world, and I'm not saying they're not important, but they do not address the cause of why a child would want to harm himself or someone else. Really, the only thing that does is social and emotional learning, which cultivates safety from the inside out of every child. So children that are connected, that can manage their emotions, that are resilient, that have those skills and tools, by the way, that have to be taught, are not going to want to harm each other. And that makes common sense, but there's research behind that as well. So we've helped change the dialogue for school safety into one that where people understand that they really need not only external safety measures, but also they have to address internal safety measures. And that's social and emotional learning.
Well, your program focuses on four important character values: courage, gratitude, forgiveness, and compassion in action. And I'd like to go back to what you were talking about. You and JT, you did a presentation at a prison.
Yes.
And you talked about forgiveness.
That was really early on, and it was after my book, Nurturing Healing Love, was released, and I was asked to send copies up to convicted felons and then go 2 weeks later to speak with them about the book. And I thought, well, no convicted felon is going to read a book called Nurturing Healing Love, you know, but I don't mind donating them, and I will definitely go in and talk to them. And it was such an incredible experience and learning experience for JT and I as well, to connect with those guys on such a tremendously important level, and that is the level of pain, and to talk about nurturing healing love. They've not only read it, they dog-eared it, underlined it, highlighted it, they'd rewritten passages, they were ready to talk. And this concept of choice, that they could choose love rather than anger, hatred, and resentment, they didn't know that. And that's what they told me. They said, all we ever knew was anger, hatred, and revenge. And you hurt me, and I'm going to hurt you and the ones that you love even more. This fact that they could thoughtfully respond in a different way and take their personal power back, that was just not anything that had ever been presented to them. That was actually part of a BBC documentary, and the session was filmed, and the person who was filming that afterwards, we had kind of a decompression session in the warden's office, and he's shaking his head, and he was saying, I don't believe that those guys that we just met with are going to be choosing love. Like, that's just too far of a stretch. So he got permission to go back and to re-interview kind of the ones that were the most outspoken. And he said, you know, nothing in your life changed. You went back to yourself. Are you still choosing love? And they all said yes. It was such an interesting reason why. And it's so simple, so simple. I think sometimes we think that the answer has to be so complicated, and it doesn't. They said, choosing love feels good. Anger, hatred, and resentment feels bad, and we want to feel good. And I don't know about you, but I do too. And sometimes we do that, and we make wrong choices because we erroneously think it's going to make us feel good. Like anger, you know, gives us adrenaline, but in the long run, it's as bad for us as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. We find that at times we struggle with them too, us big kids. And you know, we all, if we have some skills and tools, we can all choose love, and we can take our personal power back. And that does feel good.
That feels great. And, you know, we need to choose love. And the formula for choosing love, as you say, it starts with courage. And your son, Jesse, at 6 years old, showed amazing courage.
He did. When the shooter came into his room, his first grade classroom, that is, his gun either jammed or ran out of bullets. I don't think it was ever clear. And while he was changing his clip, Jesse called for his friends to run. And they said it's because he directed them to run that they ran. And he was able to save 9 of his classmates' lives. And he stayed by the side of his teacher. So, before the gunman reloaded and then murdered everyone else in the room. So I know I'm sorry that that's graphic for your audience, but he was 6 years old. He was 6 years old. And, you know, I use that example age appropriately, of course, because that's the same courage that we all have within us. Jesse was a 6-year-old little boy. He doesn't have anything that we don't all have. It's just that with courage, and when you look at the science behind courage, it's like a muscle. And it's something that we need to practice to strengthen, and we can. and by the way, I'm not talking about the courage to do what Jesse did. I'm talking about the courage to be kind to one another, to do the right thing, to be vulnerable, to tell the truth, to speak out and up. That all takes courage. Sometimes it takes courage to get out of bed and put our best foot forward. That's all courage. And we all have the courage to do that, but we do need to practice it. And that's one of the things that we teach in our program for the lifespan. And, you know, we need courage to practice the rest of the character values in the formula for choosing love as well. And, you know, the next one is gratitude. And it takes courage to be grateful when things aren't going our way. But it's interesting, it's not happiness that makes us grateful, but it's gratefulness that makes us happy. And then we talk about forgiveness, and it takes courage to forgive, especially when the person who hurt you isn't sorry. And getting back to the prisoners, I did talk a lot about forgiveness and just how, for me, that forgiveness was really cutting a cord that attached me to pain. Forgiveness, and my new definition for forgiveness, is simply taking your personal power back, right? If I didn't forgive the man that murdered my son, I would be giving him power over my thoughts that impact my feelings, that then impact my behavior and then would ripple out to my son and the rest of my family and everything that I do. And the only way for me to take my personal power back was to forgive. And that was literally cutting the cord that attached me to pain. And I was talking to the prisoners about that because, you know, a lot of us don't know what the definition of forgiveness is. And we don't talk about it. We don't teach it. A lot of us don't practice it on a daily basis, but it actually is the key to having healthy relationships. And Harvard University says that healthy relationships are the key to happiness per 75-year longitudinal study on human life. It's really, really important. It happens to be really important. And, you know, when people first heard that I wanted to put forgiveness in the formula, everyone said, wow, that's a lofty topic for kids. How are you going to teach kids that? But it's turned out it's not a lofty topic for kids. In fact, a lot of times it's kids' favorite character value. And when you ask them why, which always surprises me because I always think it's going to be courage or compassion in action because that feels so good, they say, because it's a superpower, the forgiveness, because it feels so good to let it go. I'm literally quoting what fifth grade boys have told me. Wow. And then compassion in action. It takes courage for each one of us to step outside of our busyness and distraction in life and our own goings on and even pain to help someone else. And when we do that, we're choosing love. And it's this formula that walks you through the steps. You have to start with courage. And then you have to choose gratitude. You don't have to do anything. But when you choose gratitude, you're stepping yourself towards taking your personal power back and being happy. And then it's forgiveness. It's letting down that big weight that a lot of us carry around with us of pain and anger and resentment and finger pointing and blame and fault finding on other people. Literally, you can just lay that down and then stepping outside of our own pain to help other people. That's compassion in action, and that's choosing love, and that's it. And it's simple, but powerful.
You once talked about the meaning of life. You ended a TED talk with giving the definition, the meaning of life.
Wow. That was really early on. Oh my gosh. And I believe I finished it off with nurturing, healing love and the bravery to have a lot of fun. A lot of this is awareness. It's awareness skills and tools that we have a choice, and it's right in front of us, and everything that we have is within us. And it's really a simple pathway that we can take to make that choice. And I've done it. And it's not like it's a one-time deal. It is a daily thing. But you know what? The effort and awareness and presence that it takes is well worth having a life and igniting the spark within you and letting it shine and sharing that with others. It's such a great feeling, and everyone has that ability. Every single person on the planet has that ability.
Scarlett, I just want to briefly, because we're running out of time, I wanted to have you speak about the new initiative, if you could, the 2018 yearbook.
Yeah, thank you. This was a partnership that we had with some other people, and they had actually brought me the idea just to kind of run it by me about this yearbook that they were creating with the victims of 2018 school shootings. There were actually 37 of them, and 2018 was the worst year for school shootings on record. I actually wasn't even aware of that, and I don't think a lot of people are aware of that.
No, because they were separate. They were separate incidents, so people don't put it all together and say, oh my.
Right.
Which is not good.
No, it's become our new normal. I chose to become involved in this project, which actually sent these yearbooks out to all the governors in every state, the president, Congress. It's not to politicize the issue, because by the way, school safety is not a political issue at all. It's an issue of the heart. The issue of the heart is the reason this is actually happening in the first place. And it was just to remind people, bring it to the forefront. We cannot stop talking about this. Kids must be safe in schools. Schools must be a safe haven for our children and our hero educators. And so it was really just a call to action. And that call to action was choose love. It directs us to our website. It asks you to take an oath and spread it. That's because the solution is within all of us. And it's such an important message. It has nothing to do with guns or no guns. It has everything to do with love.
Well, Scarlett, Jesse is still here. His act of courage, his words, nurturing, healing, and love. What a six-year-old has made happen in such a tragedy is amazing. And I am so glad that you were able to be here today to help spread this word, because this needs to be done. We're in a new year now, and this should be the gift for the new year, spreading love.
That's right. This is your gift for the new year. All of our programming is no cost. Please go to our website, chooselovemovement.org, and take a look. Ask your schools. If you have kids, go to your school. Say, do you have a comprehensive year-long social emotional learning program taught with fidelity? If they don't, and really kind of, you know, probe, then say, hey, here's one, and it's no cost. Bring it into your homes. Offer it up to your communities.
Well, Scarlett, thank you so much. You've been not just informative, but your courage and your love and compassion is definitely contagious.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. Thank you for helping me spread this message.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking with another extraordinary woman. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and of course, our website, lifeofprey.com. Listen, subscribe for free, and take us with you wherever you are. This has been a Life of Prey production.